the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. My name's Dan Latto, and in this podcast, I wanted to run through the five things that the rich do that the poor do not. Now, I'm never really keen about calling people rich or calling people poor, because it's just a sliding scale, isn't it? You know, like there's some people can't afford just clothes and food and that sort of thing. And then there's other people who can't afford, you know, the latest Bentley because they bought the last one last year sort of thing. So, there's a whole sort of scale upon this. So I'm really uncomfortable calling them the differences between the rich and the poor, or even the wealthy and the poor. But I just want you to get that in mind. But I'm just going to run through these five differences for you. So, there's many more than just five, but these are generally, if you cover all five of these, then you'll be doing okay, okay? So the first one that I want to cover is that the poor, they look to retire at 65. Now, obviously, it's not going to be 65, is it? Because it's going to be 67 at the bare minimum now. I think it's actually gone up as retirement age on a government pension. And of course, by the way, if you've got a private pension, you can pull that down at 55 if you've got enough money saved up in it. Now, I'm not a great believer in pensions, by the way. I've not got a pension. Well, I have actually. I've got a small pension, and actually we moved it over into Bitcoin, as you do, just to be a little bit awkward and a little bit different than everybody else. But I'm not a great believer in pensions. I'm a great believer in property. But this is the difference, is that the poor people, they look to retire. They look to get to 65, finally be able to give up work, go on that world cruise. Unfortunately, though, for those people, they tend to die within the next couple of years, because they've gone from working 40, 50 hours a week and having all this stuff to doing nothing, sat around the house, the boredom kicks in. And so it literally causes them to be bored to death to some extent. The rich, however, what they do is they don't look to retire. You know, like, I mean, I've retired like two or three times. I retired once just before my 30s. That was before the kids came along, and when the kids came along, it's like, oh, I can't afford to just not do anything anymore. So we started a lettings agency. And also, by the way, we got really bored doing nothing. And I remember a friend of mine saying, oh, if it was me, I'd just be playing golf all the time. And I'm like, yeah, but who with? And it's like, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Yeah, I don't want to be walking around with a 70-year-old at the golf thing talking about his prostrate. That's the last thing I want to be doing with my time. So the rich, or the wealthy people, what they do is they look for what's fun. They look for what's next. What's an interesting project that they can do? So, for example, for me, it's, you know, we've got lots of different things that we do, but some are income generating and some are not. Some are fun. In fact, if it's not fun, we tend not to do it. It's pretty much as straightforward as that, really. So it's either fun or it doesn't get done, and it rhymes, which is quite nice. So the wealthy people, they're always looking at what's the next thing. What else can they do? But one of the reasons I do coaching is because it doesn't take a huge amount of my time. I really enjoy it. I love getting the results for the people. Obviously, they enjoy those results as well, the ones that put in the effort. And those that don't, by the way, don't get results. It's fairly obvious, you know, if you join a gym and you don't actually go, you ain't going to lose weight. If you start a diet and you just eat kebabs and pizza and donuts, you're not going to lose weight. It doesn't matter how much money you spend at the gym and how much money you spend on the diet. If you don't do the work, it doesn't work, okay? But for me, I'm always looking at what's next. You know, we live on the coast in the Mediterranean, so now I'm thinking, do we get a speedboat? And like instantly, as soon as I'm thinking getting a speedboat, I'm like, how can I monetize that? It's just the way in which my mind works. It's been programmed to work like that. It wasn't always like that, but it has been programmed to think just like that. Now, for most people, their brain hasn't been programmed like that. Their brain is, you know, what's fun? What can I consume? They don't think about how can I make money off things. And that's, for me, has been indicative of to why I've done well financially. It's because I've always looked at how can I monetize it. I mean, I bought a 45 grand, it's 42 and a half grand it was, bright yellow Porsche 911. I bought that, I think cost me about £400 a month with a £12,000 deposit, I think it was. And we rented that beast out. That made money for me every single month. And when it wasn't rented, we drove it around. And it was awesome. We had an asset that, all right, it's depreciating, but it was an asset because it put money in our pocket. How cool is that? So we're always looking at what we can do next that's going to add to our financial bottom line. It needs to be fun as well. So that's difference number one. The poor look to retire to get to 65. It's almost like they're holding their breath until they can get there. And then once they get there, very like, they give up work and then they get bored and then they die a couple of years later, fairly unfulfilled. All those dreams and hopes that they had at age 30, 40 and 50 that they think they're going to get to do when they're 65 disappear because ill health and all the rest of it. You know, I'm 45 now. I get to go all around the world. I'm a little bit sort of sick of traveling and jumping on planes right now. Although it's been pretty intense this year. So the rich look for what's fun. So what's next then? Well, number two is that the poor people, the people who've got not a lot of money, they've just got one source of income. And usually it's a job, right? They don't have assets. They don't have stuff that puts money in your pocket, whether they're sleeping or not. They just got the job that they get up and go to work, and sometimes are paid hourly or sometimes are paid monthly. But basically, if you don't turn up to that job, you ain't getting paid. It's as simple as that. Yeah, you can take 4 weeks of holiday, but effectively, if you're not turning up, you're not getting paid. Now, the wealthy, however, and I definitely put myself into this category, we've got multiple sources of income. Multiple. So we've got businesses, we've got our property, and then we've got our stocks and shares. So there are three different income generators for me. So if property takes a tumble in some way, then, you know, I'll just have to turn the business on a little bit more, turn the tap there, increase our marketing and so on, close more clients, and that will cover that shortfall. Or if the business has taken a hit, and actually, interestingly, after Brexit, the number of clients that we signed up definitely decreased, which was really interesting. But it wasn't an issue for me because we had the property and actually rents were going up anyway. And then we've got our investments. You know, we made an investment in the last 12 months that's given us a 60% return in like 7 months. We're just waiting for that money to come through right now. How cool is that, by the way? And then we've got stuff like Bitcoin, which, by the way, is not investing. It's more like gambling, but we've got that through our pension. And that's, you know, we're thinking long term for that, you know, 20 years. I mean, actually, I'm 10 years off being able to draw down a private pension, but we're going to wait 15, 20 years because we can afford to do that. But we can only afford to do that because we've got multiple streams of income. And people go, well, what? Give us examples of multiple streams of income. So buy a Porsche 911, rent it out. There's one. That's a great idea. An old friend of mine does Ferrari hire and Porsche hire and Lamborghini hire. And he wakes up and chooses which car to drive that's not rented out that day. How awesome is that? Or you could invest in the stock market and you get paid dividends plus the appreciation of the capital itself. You know, if you buy stocks and shares in Boots.com, you know, Boots PLC, the drug company, you'll get a dividend each year and hopefully the price will rise. Although you can't live on the price rising, by the way. You can only live on the cash flow. And then if you're living on the cash flow, you can't reinvest it. So what else can you do? You can start a business. You can start a part-time business. You could do titling for YouTube videos. And you could say, I don't know, I'll do £10 a video or £5 a video. And, you know, 10 videos a week, that's £100 a week, that's an extra £400. You put £400 into assets, like the 60% return I was getting, and that soon starts to work for you. Obviously, property is a big one. You've got rent to rent, where you can take over somebody else's asset and, you know, put it to work, and it will start generating cash flow for you. Or you can buy property outright, or you can convert commercial to residential. I mean, there's so many different ways of doing it. But this is the key, is that the wealthy people have multiple forms of income. I've got multiple forms of income. I don't just sit and hope for one source of income. And I remember an argument with my bank at the time because I wanted a loan for like 10 grand or something. And they asked me how many properties I had. And I had like 10 or 12 properties at the time. It's going back some time as this. And they said to me, I said, well, what if all your tenants leave? I'm like, well, we'll just get new ones. And she went, yeah, but it could take a while to get a tenant. By the way, we don't do voids. We've not got anything empty right now. Everything's full. It's always full. We just don't do voids, right? We've got a very good marketing system that's in place. So we don't get voids. And I said to this woman who's on the phone at the bank, and I said, well, how many sources of income have you got? And she went, well, I mean, she didn't understand the question because she works in a bank. Why would they understand anything about making money and about, well, I mean, they make a lot of money, don't they? They make a lot in terms of their profits. You know, they make something between £20,000 and £30,000 profit per employee. Go and do the maths on this. Go find out how much Lloyds makes each year, or RBS, or Barclays, or HSBC. I mean, divide that number by how many staff they've got, and they'll be making between £20,000 and £30,000. But that's the bank making the money. It's not the people who work in the bank. They're making their 30 grand a year and then losing 20-30% on that in tax. So they're coming out with 20. They're literally coming out with £1,800 a month. which is impossible to live on to any great sort of level. Like, you're literally just surviving, right? So having multiple sources of income. So this lady, she was like, yeah, but, you know, my employer has to give me 4 weeks' notice. I'm like, yeah, but you just had to go at me, because what if all my tenants move out and they have to give me a month's notice as well? And I've got like 10 or 12 different tenants. If one moves out, it actually doesn't make a big difference because we still cover the rent run. She couldn't understand it. Just, I mean, and we wouldn't expect her to. She's a drone, an automaton working in a bank. She's just a number pushing buttons. That's it. And so this is the understanding that I need you guys to understand, that one source of income versus multiple sources of income is one of the keys that's going to get you wealthy. Is it difficult? Of course it's bloody difficult. It's not easy starting a part-time business when you're working all hours, and, you know, just getting the thing up and running and moving is really, really difficult. So you've got to start putting yourself under pressure. That's why the coaching comes in, by the way, because it gives you that extra level of pressure. Plus it explains and shows you what to do next to get the biggest return for your activity. Okay, so that was number two. Number three was that the poor people, they'll spend time to save money. But wealthy people, you see, they'll spend the money to save the time. Now, as it happens, I'm very time rich, very time wealthy. I can get up and I can go, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I might do this, I might not do that, whatever. It makes no difference what I do during the day with my time. If I wake up tomorrow, which is Tuesday, I had to think then, it's an open calendar. I've got stuff in my to-do list that I want to do, but you know what? I can move it around. If I go, I'm just going to go paddle surfing all day long, then I can just go do that. I'm very time wealthy. So I enjoy doing the filming. I enjoy doing the podcast. I enjoy all that stuff, but there's certain aspects I don't really enjoy. Some of the editing stuff, I don't mind editing actually, but sometimes I just want to outsource it and give it to someone else. So I'll do that. But the rich people, you see, they'll spend the money to save the time. Now, as I say, I'm quite time rich, so I don't need to do that. But for you guys, if you're working a job and you're trying to start a business, why are you doing everything yourself? You know, if you can get away with paying someone in the Far East, and I'm talking Thailand, the Philippines, India, and you can get away with paying them $2 an hour, why are you doing that same thing when you can pay someone $2 an hour? Because that is how much you're worth. You're worth $2 an hour if you're doing it yourself. Does that make sense? So the poor people, they're spending the time to save the money. Now, don't get me wrong. I totally get it. If your income only just covers your outgoing, don't spend that money on adverts and YouTube videos and so on, right? Do that yourself, because that's the commodity that you've got. But when you start covering it, so if you sell coaching at £100 a month and you get 10 clients, then that's, you know, that's £1,000 a month. Great. You can spend £200-£300 a month on a VA that can actually do some of that work for you. That's awesome. So when you get to that stage, then you can do it. Until then, you do need to do it yourself, because we don't want you going into debt in order to run your business. That's not how a business should be started in the first place. A business should be started off its own laurels, which basically means that you make some money. That's the money you can spend on a business, not anything else. All right. So that was number three. Number four, then, the poor consume content. Now, you're sat there, or maybe you're running, or maybe you're on the toilet. I have no idea. Maybe you're in the car. Maybe you're on the tube. But right now, you are consuming my content. Now, the wealthy, however, we create content. And what does that tell you? Now, first of all, it doesn't tell you to stop listening. Keep listening, because you need this stuff, right? But what it does tell you is that when you get home tonight, start creating some content. I mean, I've just this morning been at the coffee shop. We've done 3 or 4 videos, all of which between 3 and 5 minutes long. I got chatting to an English couple just sat in a beach bar there, and he turned around and said, "This is an amazing office for you, isn't it?" He was watching me doing some of my videos. And I get embarrassed doing videos, by the way, when people are watching, but screw it. So, but it's about me creating content, because if I can create more and more content and get into someone's head, like you're listening to this now, you're not listening to someone else, you're listening to me. It's impossible to listen to a podcast and watch TV. It's impossible to listen to a podcast and listen to music. You're on the tube, you're in the car, you're running the treadmill, or you're sat cooking or whatever, eating, but you're listening to this. I'm creating content and you're consuming it. And then you finish your tea or your dinner or your food, and then you go and watch Netflix and you consume more content. Now, I'm not having a go at you specifically, but this is what the people who haven't got the money yet, they're constantly consuming. Now, don't get me wrong, some content has to be consumed. Knowing the 5 differences between rich and poor, like this podcast is about, is really, really important. because then you can see where you're going wrong. But it's when you start watching Netflix. I mean, you know, I love Battlestar Galactica, for example. I get a lot of quotes from Battlestar Galactica. I love it, right? I love Star Trek. I love Stargate. I love anything sci-fi, anything that creates optimism for, you know, a newer version of ourselves, effectively, in some point in the future. I love all that stuff. But I limit how much of that I watch. And by the way, I'm not perfect at that. Sometimes I overwatch stuff. And, you know, Game of Thrones, I don't watch it, by the way. We tried season one and two, didn't get into it. But anyway, Game of Thrones, you just sat there and you're watching it. EastEnders and Corrie and Emmerdale. You know, between eight and 10 million people watch each of those programs every night. That's 3 hours a night for, you know, between 6 and 8 people watching 3 hours a night of those. And then these are the same people who go, well, yeah, I ain't got time to do that, Dan. You don't understand how busy I am, you see. I'm busy watching Corrie, Emmerdale and Game of Thrones and Jeremy Kyle and whatever else. I mean, don't get me wrong. I watch that stuff, but I limit what I watch because I would rather be creating more content for other people to consume because eventually they might eventually become a client of mine. Okay, so that's number four. It's a bit of a harsh one, is number four, really. But I think it's useful to have it in there. You know me, folks. sometimes I say inappropriate things, and that's okay. All right, so number five, the last one, is that the poor people, they get told to save, and they listen, so they save. The rich people, however, they don't save. What are we saving for? And, you know, financial advisors go, well, you need a buffer. What if your boiler breaks down? That's what credit cards are for. Because you pay it off in 4 weeks. Or it was 3 months and you paid a little bit of interest on that. That's okay. It's not a problem to do that. So, you know, if it's 24% interest, divide it by 12, that's 2% a month. You're going to pay 6% on a 2 grand boiler. What is 6%? 120 quid? That's fine. I can live with that. But saving money where you're getting, you know, 1 and 2% in your bank is crazy. Make sure you've got a buffer on a credit card. And if you've got credit cards, before you even start saving, you pay off your credit cards. That's like the golden rule. You pay off your credit cards. Well, I'm going to start saving at 2% a year. That's what I'm going to do because my financial advisor, my bank manager told me that's what I need to do. Of course, your bank manager would be telling you that because they can lend that money out at 24%, that 2% that they're paying you. That's why they want that money and put in savings. That's why that advice, oh, you need to be saving. That's why that advice is there. Of course, they want you to save. That's why there's all these adverts about saving. But that's not what the rich people do. The rich people, they invest their money. They put it into assets that will give them a 60% return. And sometimes when we've got spare money that if we lost wouldn't affect our livelihood, we put it into Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and so on. Because if we did lose it, which is a potential risk, it's not going to affect our lives greatly. But right now, if you're putting 10 grand that you could pay off your credit card with into Bitcoin and Bitcoin just, you know, collapses entirely, made completely illegal or whatever, right? Whatever's going to happen. Then you've lost that money. You need to pay off your debt, pay off your credit cards, pay off anything that's costing you, you know, 10 or 20%. Pay all that stuff off. That's exactly what you need to be doing. But then once all that's paid off, then don't be saving. You've then got credit cards with money available on them. Now, you don't touch that money. Bear in mind, I have bought a house with credit cards and then, you know, got 6 months interest free, paid it back off, made the money. So that's fairly high risk as well. I just wanted to do it so I could say I've done it sort of thing, you know. It's not a great idea because it's higher risk and so on. But anyway, you've got this 10 grand now available on a credit card. So if your boiler blows up, you bang it on a card. Fine. You've got, six weeks worth free interest. But after that, then once all that debt's paid down, then you've got to start investing that money into something that's going to generate a return on that investment. So take Coca-Cola. I don't know what the dividend on Coca-Cola is, but Warren Buffett buys it. I'm guessing it's 6%. Heinz, the guys that make salad cream and tomato ketchup, they also invested by Warren Buffett. In fact, he owns most of Heinz, I believe. So like anything that Warren does is a good thing for you to copy, right? So, but by the way, 6% as a yield isn't brilliant, but it's not property where you might get 8 or 10% or more if it's a HMO, because there's no work to do. You don't have to go in and stir the Heinz ketchup and stir the salad cream. You don't have to do any of that stuff when you're investing in those type of companies because they already do it for you. But conversely to that, you've got zero control, whereas at least with property, you can go and paint it, put a nice bedding on, maybe put the rent up, rent it out during September, which is when all the students are around, and so there's a real scarcity of available properties so rents can go up and so on. You can't do that sort of thing with Heinz. But this is the difference, is that the poor save and the rich invest. But when you start investing, if you're just starting out, investing in stuff that's not going to give you 12% returns, because that's higher risk. We don't want you to lose that money. Rule number one of investing is not to lose money. And so when we come and talk about Bitcoin, this is not a huge amount of money that we're investing. It's a very small percentage of our entire portfolio because it's much higher risk. We don't want to be faced with such high risk. So the poor people are told to save. The rich people, they're investing in businesses, they're investing in stocks and shares, they're investing in properties. And this is what you've got to look at as well. So look, there are five different things. I've run through them very quick in 20 minutes flat, but that's not bad at all. One every 4 minutes. But you need to listen to this podcast again and consume this information. Number four, the poor consume. You'll consume this information and put it into practice. Even share it with your friends. Write a little book. The five things that the poor do that the rich don't. Or the poor, the rich do, but the poor, whatever, right? Whatever title should be. Make a little podcast and just do it again. Make a little video and share it. Create that content and then send it out to your mailing list. And so these are the five things that you need to start implementing. All right, I hope that's useful for you, and we'll catch up with you on the next podcast. My name's Dan Latto. Speak to you soon. Take care.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.